out well on a national championship Monday night. We brought the South out to the Bay. Big showing for Levi's. Field was actually in great shape. Clemson, Tigers, Dabo, Sweeney. Two national championships, 3 years, takes down Nick Saban. What a game. We'll dive into that in 1 second. Big NFL show coming up. Bears, the Eagles, Deshaun Watson, John Harbaugh, Dak Prescott, Bruce Arians. We'll talk about it all. A lot went on in the last 48 hours in the NFL world. Probably toward later in the week, we'll get into these second-round matchups and probably dive more into some of the head coaching thoughts. I know Matt LaFleur got hired as the Green Bay Packers head coach today. I'm not really going to talk about that tonight. Probably talk about that later this week. Probably talk about it more if you follow me on Twitter, have some thoughts, but no big takeaway there right now, at least for this show. But let's dive into the national championship. And again, we end with the Middlecoff mailbag. You can slide up in my DMs at John Middlecoff, and I'll answer questions at the end of every show. But I think the big story tonight with, I'm a big believer in college football. In college football, you meet a lot of people that have run businesses. They often tell you it's not about the building, but the people in the building. And I do think in the NFL, for the most part, it's more about the Jimmys and the Joes and the X's and O's. Probably a combination of the both. You need them both. Like, you need Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and Bill Walsh. You need Tom Brady, Gronk, and Bill Belichick, right? You need Peyton Manning and Tony Dungy, but I think Tony Dungy's a little overrated. But you get my drift. You need a combination of great on both sides. In college football, that's true too, but the head coaches make the program. Like, I'm 34 years old. The majority of my life, Alabama sucked. They got Nick Saban. They basically became John Wooden's UCLA dynasty. Florida, once Steve Spurrier left, was in shambles. Again, they were sweet with Steve Spurrier. He left for a while. They had problems. Urban Meyer shows up. They kick ass again. Urban Meyer helped make that program. Like, you put Urban Meyer wherever, you're going to win. With Urban Meyer retiring, tapping out, taking a sabbatical, whatever he considers it, it's pretty clear Saban's entrenched as number one. I know Dabo's beat him twice, but Saban's resume speaks for itself. To me, Dabo Sweeney now is the king of college football. Right after Nick Saban, he's now the Urban Meyer. And he kind of became a legend tonight. He's won two championships in 3 years. He's beat Saban twice. This time tonight, I mean, he kicked the living crap out of him, his team, offensively, defensively, the athletes he recruits. Clemson, before he became the head coach, they had the nickname of Clemsoning, meaning they would win the big games and then always lose the easy ones. It's why they would never end up in the big games. Well, ever since Dabo showed up, they're in the playoffs every year, and now they have two natties in 3 years. And their best players are all coming back. I mean, their quarterback looks like Peyton Manning at 18 years old with long hair. Their running back's a true sophomore. ETN is unreal. They got dudes on defense that are junior or sophomores and freshmen that are awesome. The wide receiver's a badass. I mean, I tweeted this during the game, kind of sarcastically, but kind of seriously, that what would Alabama, when Saban retires, offer Nick Saban? 10 years, $100 million? 12 years, $120 million? Excuse me, when Nick Saban retires, offer Dabo Sweeney. Like, what is Dabo Sweeney going to be worth through Alabama? Now, does he leave Clemson to go to Alabama, his alma mater? He's from Birmingham, Alabama. You know, probably not. But you never know. You know, money talks, shit walks. Jimbo Fisher got $75 million to go to Texas A&M. What's Dabo Sweeney worth? Now, he makes a boatload at Clemson. Like, money's not an issue at Clemson. His defensive coordinator, who is a superstar, Brett Venables, makes over $2 million. Their defense is, I mean, dominant. Dabo's a receiver at heart. He recruits these wide receivers from Hopkins to, I mean, you just go down the line to Sammy Watkins to, I mean, it's just incredible the guys they produce. That guy number eight they have that's a true freshman right now. They produce dudes with their eyes closed. But tonight was just a moment when, you know, every once in a while, back in the early 90s, when that Grant Hill came together, like Coach K kind of became Coach K, and then over the next 20 years just became a legend, kind of feels like Dabo is going to do that to college football. because it doesn't feel like he's an NFL coach, but it definitely doesn't feel like he's, you know, it's either Clemson or Alabama, and he's got a 10, 15 year, he's only 50 years old. So why couldn't he rattle off, why couldn't he be back-to-back champs next year? He's got the quarterback coming out, or coming back, excuse me. Like, this thing's just getting started. Now, I don't think Alabama's going away. They're still stacked. I think I saw someone on Twitter say that's the biggest deficit or the biggest loss Nick Saban's had since he was the coach of the Miami Dolphins. Like, this was an abnormal Nick Saban performance. He doesn't get beat like this. To me, it was so jaw-dropping because we never see this. But I said the whole time, like, I don't think people quite realize how good Clemson is. They have, there were probably 80 NFL players in this game. Considering freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, and seniors. You know, there are probably 30 first-round picks. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of NFL players in this game. But Clemson clearly came into this game with a chip on their shoulder, with an edge as the underdog, came into Levi Stadium and kicked Bama's ass. Now, I don't think it changes the legacy or anything to Nick Saban. He's one of the greatest football coaches we've ever seen. Owned college football forever. They had an off night. They got beat by a team with elite players and an elite coach. Like, Nick's lost to Urban Meyer before. Sometimes other elite coaches just beat you. That happens, you know? Belichick lost twice to Tom Coughlin. But when you're Tom Coughlin, you beat Belichick twice. That kind of makes your career. Like, now Dabo, I've told a couple people, I think he's going to go Roy Williams. Remember the way he did when he was at Kansas. North Carolina wanted to hire him. He let Dean Smith retire. Then there was like a 3 or 4 year gap when the program got in shambles. Because you never want to be the guy to hire, follow a legend. You don't want to necessarily follow Nick Saban. You want to be the guy after the guy that followed him. Now, if you're Dabo Swinney, they'd pay you so much money, you'd have to think about it. But as Phil Savage once told me about Jimbo at Florida State, and now this is definitely ring true for Dabo at Clemson, why would you ever leave one of these programs in the ACC, especially when they're paying you that much money? You recruit SEC players, but you play an ACC schedule. Like, regardless how much they'll pay you at Alabama, it's much harder to get to the title game. That's part of Saban's greatness. He's beating the crap out of LSU every year. Like, that's not easy. Or Auburn. Or now Texas A&M, they're in the conference. Mississippi State's not bad. Then you got to play Georgia in the SEC championship game. Like, who does Clemson have to beat? Pitt? Manny Diaz in Miami? I was going to say Larry Fedora, but he got fired. I don't even know. Mac Brown at UNC? ACC is where it's at. I mean, if I was Dabo, I'd ride this bad boy out. You might be able to win 3 straight natties with Trevor Lawrence. And what a stud that kid is. I hesitate to do this because in football, so much can change. Hell, I mean, Nick Saban could retire tomorrow and Dabo could go to Alabama, right? So you never know with quarterbacks. Things change. I thought Josh Rosen was a lock to be the number one overall pick. But, man, this kid is pretty special. And he's going to be big time for a long time. He looks like a future superstar at the NFL level. I mean, I would imagine a lot of GMs are sitting on their couch tonight salivating at this kid, you know, one day playing quarterback for their team. I mean, that guy's going to make a head coach and a GM and an owner a lot of money one day. That Trevor Lawrence is a baller. You saw the difference between him and Tua on a different level. Okay, now that we got college basically wrapped up the season, we got to react and/slash look forward to what happened over the weekend. And, you know, the craziest game to me of them all was Bears-Eagles. I mean, just absolutely riveting TV. And I want to start with the Bears. And I want to start with the reaction on social media. And it's very typical. Whenever we go one way, there's an overreaction the other way. It's just a tried and true formula on social media. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. So after Cody Parkey missed the kick, and then he quote-unquote acts like a professional, he is a professional, after the game and takes the heat, everyone's like, he didn't deserve getting booed coming off the field. Everyone, stop being so mean to Cody Parkey. Listen, he's a kicker. He's got one job, and it's to make that football, that pigskin, through those two uprights. He did not get the job done. Here's the other thing with Cody Parkey. Cody Parkey is not some undrafted free agent that's getting paid $500,000. There are two kickers, I repeat, two kickers in the NFL that signed a contract with more guaranteed cash at signing than this individual. That would be Justin Tucker at Baltimore, who ironically missed a kick on Sunday too, but you know, I think we all agree he's one of the best kickers, hell, ever. And Gutkowski with the Patriots, who's had kind of gotten off the beaten path a little bit this last year, but he's had an elite career, Super Bowl champion. So Cody Parkey is paid top three in his position in guaranteed money, which in the NFL, especially at a position like kicker, is all that matters. So when you miss a kick in the first round of the playoffs after you've had a season where you've missed several kicks, I think going into that game, he's hit the post five times. That was the fifth post he's hit. So coming in, he had four hit posts. And everyone's like, oh, be nice to Cody. He acted like a pro. Are you out of your gourd? To quote Colin. Are you insane? Like, am I taking crazy pills? He's a kicker. He's paid a premium. And in this world, in this life, when you are paid a premium at any job, especially a public job, you're paid to produce. And you get crushed. It's why LeBron, Steph, Brady, Carson Wentz, you name it, any elite player in any sport, Mike Trout, when you fail on the biggest stage, you get destroyed. It's because of money. They're paid the most. Well, relative to this guy's position, he made his cap hit this year was $9 million. Made $5.5 million in cash this season to kick. And you know what? He wasn't a very good kicker. Now, if you want to give shit to Ryan Pace and the Bears management, you can. But at the end of the day, this guy, he stood in front of his locker and took it like a man. Yeah, that's the job. That is the requirement. He's a kicker. He signed an enormous contract. If he can't sit in front of his locker after losing the game and ruining their season, I mean, I just call him a clown. So, yeah, I don't tip my hat to what's expected of you. Like, that's part of the gig. And at the end of the day, he did not get the job done. And I know it came out before I recorded this podcast earlier today that the ball was tipped. And I text someone in the league. The guy that tipped it is not 6'7". The guy that tipped it was 6'2". Like, he's got to kick the ball higher. He just does. So it just overall wasn't good enough. Just that simple. And I get that Twitter's over the top on compassion. We always got to feel... like, I don't feel sorry for him. He's paid a premium to produce and he couldn't get it done. So if you're a Bears fan, you had money on the game, like me, had him in a big parlay, like, it's... that's a problem. And there's a bigger problem because they're guaranteed almost $2.5 million to him next year. They're not going to eat that cash on a kicker. He's going to be the kicker next year. He is going to be the Bears kicker next year. Just the way the cookie crumbles with the financial setup of this team. You're not going to eat that much money. You're just not. So he's got to be better. He has to be better. And this year, he simply wasn't good enough. And that kick, it has to get over Hester, a guy that's 6'2", and I know he jumped high. But you got to make that kick. There is zero excuse. Now, Matt Nagy's my guy, and people are like, are you going to rip Matt Nagy? Listen, Mitch Trubisky just isn't that good. So, and he made some big-time throws in that game, and part of the reason was because Nagy schemed him up. Now, the one thing I would say is, Matt, I wouldn't ask him right now because he's probably had the worst loss of his career, is that why'd you call a timeout when you completed the ball to Allen Robinson down the sideline? Get up to the line of scrimmage, throw the ball into the ground, and then you still have a timeout and you can work the middle of the field. Now, the difference between a 43-yard kick is maybe 30 yards. Now, again, at the end of the day, is Cody Parkey some lock to hit it from 30 yards? By no means. And I'd say anything under 45 for an NFL kicker, especially one that you're paying a premium, you got to make the kick. So zero compassion for me for Cody Parkey. He's paid a lot of money to make that kick and he didn't get it done. Now, on the other side, Philadelphia. Two things really stand out to me about this team. One, and I said it going into this game, and I like the Bears, and I related to the San Francisco Giants and something Hunter Pence always said, and it's so true, and you feel it in a team when you watch them in big games. The baseball analytical crew would tell you, pressure means nothing. Pressure doesn't exist. Every at-bat is the same. That ain't true. You could feel how tense it was in Soldier Field, how big every play was, how tight some of those guys' butts were. I mean, not literally, but you know what I'm saying. And there was something in the Eagles that we've been here, done that. And I, for the Bears defense acted like that too, even though they hadn't. The championship blood was real with that team. They were unfazed in a hostile environment, did not even flinch. It was not pretty, it was not ugly, and they found a way. Game-winning touchdown on the road against the best defense in the league with your backup quarterback. Like, to me, that's championship blood to a T. I've been thinking a lot about this the last 24 hours. I think, now obviously it's not, that win is not as good of a Super Bowl, but that win was better than either one of their playoff wins beside the Super Bowl. That win yesterday, to me, was more impressive than the NFC Championship game against Minnesota. That game was more impressive than the road win, or excuse me, the home win against Atlanta in the second round. That's the second best win of Foles' playoff career, which is kind of teetering on becoming historic. And then the other thing is just Doug. Doug Peterson, who some people in the media were just crushing last year, remember? I don't want to call him Travis, but as Jason Kelce once said, that clown Michael Lombardi. Now, I enjoy Michael Lombardi. I think he has some unique insight. I listen to some of his stuff, so I'm not some Michael Lombardi hater. But he went all in. And I've done all in before. And when I go all in, I am 100%, or at least, you know, well over 90 that I'm in right. Because when you're going to crush someone in this business, you can look kind of stupid if you don't quite have all the facts. And I'd been around Doug. I'd seen his work ethic. I knew a lot of people on his coaching staff. I knew how good Howie was. Like, he just, and clearly Carson Wentz was good. He wasn't going to fail. Now, did I think he was going to be this good? No. But I knew, like, when Michael Lombardi was saying, basically calling him Jim Tom Sula, I thought it was insane. I'd seen Jim Tom Sula. Hell, Lombardi's kid was on Jim Tom Sula's staff. I mean, it was like, I tweeted one time in the middle of the Jim Tom Sula run that the top high schools in the Bay Area wouldn't hire Jim Tom Sula to be their head coach. And I stand by that. 1,000% De La Salle would not hire Jim Tom Sula. Doug Peterson hasn't just proven to be a good head coach. He's proven to be an elite head coach. To go on the road, to call those plays, to have your backup quarterback ready, to have that team ready. There's a physical, old-school nature to him. Also, to handle the bow and arrows and just the bullets that come at you from the Philadelphia media. Listen, I work in the Bay Area media. It's easier out here. It just is. We got one guy, Tim Kawakami, that really comes hard. Everyone else, a lot of softballs. In Philadelphia, every reporter is throwing grenades, trying to take you down. There was a war zone press conference after Carson Wentz, quote-unquote, broke his back. Doug handled it. Doug's been in this league for a long time. And you know the other thing? Doug's best skill, his best skill, which clearly matters the most in the NFL, it's never mattered more. It's always mattered, but it's never mattered more given the rules. He's an elite play caller. An elite play caller. And how would you have ever known? I mean, he had never really called plays in his life in the league, but it's something that clearly comes natural to him. I knew, having seen firsthand when I worked with him in Philadelphia, just how early he'd get to the office. I saw the same thing with Nagy. Like, to me, time was never going to be his problem. You just never know on game day, ebb and flow of a game. Exceptional, man. I mean, it's just top notch. He, you know, for everyone, all of our on our knees, anointing McVays and the Shanahans and, you know, those guys. I don't think Doug Peterson quite gets the love. Maybe it's because he's a little older. Maybe it's because of the gray hair. That dude is a big-time football coach. Okay, let's get into my guy, Deshaun Watson. I'll say this. Everything I've heard of him from scouts, from people that have been through Clemson, people that have worked with the Houston Texans, speak very, very highly of him. I think he's a high-level guy. I think when Dabo called him the Michael Jordan of football, while it's a little bit hyperbole, I do think to his core he meant it. Like, he thinks this guy's the total package. And again, everything I've always personally heard is that. But I thought his actions on when did they play? I guess Saturday day was an embarrassment. Steve Smith, former, you know, wide receiver of the Ravens and the Carolina Panthers, eviscerated him on NFL Network, and I thought it was all completely fair. When you are getting worked, when you're getting your ass kicked in anything in life, any business, Any situation, it's probably a decent time just to keep your mouth shut. Now, when you're on top, I'm a bigger believer of not really rubbing it in people's faces. Now, granted, I work in a public job now where you have to kind of self-promote, so it's a tough medium. So I'm not against self-promotion, just in general. I got no problem when Cam's doing first downs when they're winning. I just like I got no problem with the celebrations when you get a turnover, the defense takes a picture together. When you get it, score a touchdown, as long as you're not down big, you celebrate. It's fun. It's football. But when you're getting your ass kicked and you're down 21-0 and you're playing like complete garbage, one of the knocks on Deshaun Watson and the reason that he didn't go number one after a borderline historic collegiate career was because a lot of people in the league didn't think he threw the ball very well. Now, I think he's dispelled that notion a lot early in his career. Throws the ball, I've thought, obviously last year he made a bunch of big plays and played fantastic this season. But the version I saw on Saturday, and some people said he had a cut hand, whatever. The ball was coming out of his hand funny. He was not throwing the ball very well. He threw the ball like a scrub in that game. And one of his best attributes is running around his elusive ability. But again, when you are getting throttled by the other team, and you are at home, and you're down 14-21-0, and honestly the game felt like 50-0, and you get a kind of a hollow first down, and every time you do with your legs, you go to do the first down sign, you kind of look like a clown. And I know love social media loves to say, let the guy have a personality. Let him be himself. Which again, I'm all for being yourself, but there's a time and a place for everything. And that was 1,000% a bad look for Deshaun Watson. The time to puff your chest out and try to rub it in the other team's, you know, face is not in a one-and-done situation in the NFL playoffs when you're getting your just destroyed. Because that's what that was yesterday, or 3 days ago now, or whatever day that game was. It was a butt-whooping. And listen, not everyone has to act like dorky Andrew Luck. I don't even expect that. I'm okay with first down signs. I like them. Brett Celek, when I was in Philadelphia, was king of it. And a lot of guys all around the league do it now. I'm not even against quarterbacks doing it. Phillip Rivers kind of sarcastically did it in the Ravens game. But when you're getting crushed, it's just not the time. It's why when you score a touchdown in a game and you're down 3-4 scores in the second half, you just don't really get to celebrate. You just don't. You know, there are still some unwritten rules that you can make yourself look like an idiot. You really can. And I thought Deshaun Watson, for the first time ever since I've been watching him, I've watched him closely since college, ever kind of embarrassed himself. And it was a bad look. And it's one of those, you don't have to publicize or anything, but I think if you're Bill O'Brien, you sit down to him and you just, I don't know if that's the time, man. Because even quarterbacks, even young, successful quarterbacks, need some coaching and need to be told sometimes, yeah, that's not right. We all, you know, even the most mature humans can do immature things. And Deshaun Watson's still 24, 25, 23, however old he is. He's still young. So to think that he is just absolved from doing immature stuff, he's a guy. And we're, as guys, as competitive men, we do stupid shit. I mean, that's just a reality. Well, that was stupid. And I thought it was beyond a terrible look. I'm glad Steve Smith saw it. I think a lot of players saw it. And I know Jalen Ramsey tweeted like, just be you, bro. Have a personality. Like, hey, Jalen, no one's telling him not to have a personality. But when you're getting blasted in the mouth by a team in your division, which is just kicking your butt in a home playoff game that you've earned, that ain't the time. That ain't it. Okay, let's get into an interesting situation. Right, the information I have as of right now on around lunchtime, recorded some of this before the national championship game, on Monday, is that John Harbaugh, the latest is that Ian Rapsheet said they're going to work on extension and that John Harbaugh is going to be extended. I think it's kind of clear that the Dolphins, the Broncos, they are very interested in John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh now, that he proved that he could win with this other guy, has a bunch of leverage. Like the Ravens, the going rate for John Harbaugh and Steve Bisciotti, John Gruden got $10 million. Pete Carroll signed an extension at $11 million. John Harbaugh, at minimum, is getting $11 million. So you're talking about 4 or 5 years at probably $12 million per. So, I mean, you might be talking like $4 million or 4 years, $48 million extension, you know, with a year left on his deal here. So you're talking a lot of cash. Now, that's the going rate, I personally think, and people that have listened to this, the coaches are underpaid. But when you look at John Harbaugh, when I worked in the league, I didn't have a great feel for this. I was so young, I didn't have any leverage. You know, I had to sign contracts that I can't even imagine. I don't even know how I lived, making no money. I had no leverage. I only knew the people in the league that I worked with. It was, you know, if they offered you $50,000 to scout, you just took the job. You know, my entry level into the job was nothing. These coaches and execs, some of them gain a lot of leverage. The longer you're in any business, you can create more leverage. And now John Harbaugh has a ton of leverage. But he also should know this, and I've learned this since getting in the media. Now I have a separate podcast from this. I do with a good buddy of mine, Guy Haberman, that's, you know, going to be the Marv Albert one day of play-by-play. He's fantastic in his early 30s. Went to high school together. We own the podcast together. So I sell a lot of partnerships. I do a Periscope show through Twitter that I've sold partnerships through. I've just done other business deals through advertising, and I've won some and I've lost some. And I've realized through that experience, nothing like the John Harbaugh $12 million a year, but I have known on a smaller scale, and it's all relative to what you make, that you're only as strong as the partners you align with. Whether you do a podcast with someone, whether you go into business with someone, any contract you sign with someone, where in football, Ozzie Newsome just retired, he would basically be signing his contract to do a partnership. Now, I get you make, he's going to make money regardless. That's at the point. Like, my business personally is at the point where I'm still kind of, I have to hustle to keep getting advertisers in different things that I do. Like, it's not just a self-sustaining ship. Which, again, it's kind of fun. You know, it's a challenge in this profession that I've chosen. Just like John Harbaugh 15 years ago was an up-and-coming assistant. It takes time. Well, now he's got to the point where he's got a ton of options. He can tell people no. And that's a powerful thing whenever you have, in a contract negotiation, the ability to tell people no. But I also think you have the ability to look at who you want to align yourself with. And with the Ravens, if he signs on, and again, as of right now, he hasn't signed on, and even if he signs on, it won't really change this, my take on this. Why would you sign up long-term when you have options and you're going to get paid no matter what to do a deal with Lamar Jackson? What Lamar Jackson is doing is not sustainable. Like, I've been saying it all along. If you consistently watch him, he can't make basic passes. Like, a basic 3rd-and-8, a 9-yard out route, he can't complete it. On a, you know, a 3rd-and-long, they don't trust him. Now, is one day can he develop into that? I'm not writing against him. And just because I didn't like him coming out doesn't mean if he becomes a good player, I won't tip my hat to him. I'm never, married to an opinion on a player. Like, if I like a guy or if I don't like a guy, and then that guy becomes good, I go, God, good for him. Especially when they're good people. Like, Lamar Jackson, clearly everyone that I knew that evaluated him and met him coming out, he's a good guy. So I root for guys. I didn't like Teddy Bridgewater. I loved him as a person. I just didn't like him as a player. I root for his comeback story. I'm rooting for him. Now, did I ever like him as a first-round pick? No. But I remember being at a Raider game and watching Teddy Bridgewater, this young fan, walk by, and no one was paying attention. It was way pregame, and I'm handing him his gloves and saw the excitement in the Teddy Bridgewater, and again, you'd be like, well, that's no shit. Yeah, I mean, it was just cool. Like, I like Teddy Bridgewater. I like Lamar Jackson. I just don't think he's very good. And I know this, as a coach, if I was in John Harbaugh's shoes, I would not tie myself to that guy. He's too niche-y. Jim Harbaugh, his brother, did something similar with Kaepernick. And Kaepernick was way better than Lamar Jackson. He had a much stronger arm. He was a more explosive straight line runner. He was just bigger, stronger, more powerful. He was just better. And that ultimately, the next year, Jim Harbaugh, or I guess it might have been his 3rd year, because Kaepernick came in for Alex Smith in the 1st year. They went to the Super Bowl. The 2nd year, full-time starter, goes to the NFC Championship. By the 3rd year starting, Jim and Greg Roman and the offensive staff, they tried to run a more normal offense that wasn't just pistol-oriented, because you had to be diversified. 4 or 5 wide, and just a modern spread attacking passing game. And he couldn't do it because he wasn't accurate enough. So if I'm John Harbaugh, and I'm going to get in bed with someone, whether it's the Dolphins, I'm not even saying the Dolphins or the Denver, he could probably pick multiple other spots. Hell, he could just not sign a contract extension and just kind of go Joe Flacco. Next year, let it play out. It's why I always say when people, you know, John Elway this weekend, I think, blocked some assistant coaches from interviewing at other jobs. And social media freaked out. Like, how could he do that to those guys? Well, here's how. When you're an assistant coach, and scouts are the same way, and you sign a multi-year deal, and anyone in business can relate, because most of you guys, as I kind of am now, you're just at-will employees, or you're just at-will of a business deal, can be broken at any moment. When you sign a 2 or 3 year contract, that's for financial security. Well, one of the things you give up with financial security is power to go wherever you want in your industry. So if you're an assistant coach and you sign a 2 year deal, and on the second year, you know, after the first year, your head coach gets fired, that team still owns your rights, but they also still owe you if they fire you. That's part of the leverage in the contract. If I'm John Harbaugh, I go, I don't know if I want to be the Ravens' long-term coach because I wouldn't want to get in bed with Lamar Jackson. I have somewhat of an example with my own brother that it's really hard to coach these type guys on the field, not as people. Like that was before Kaepernick started kneeling. That's when he was like the highest character guy on the team and everyone liked him. That was before we started, you know, wearing his earphones to lunch or whatever. Like everyone loves Lamar Jackson and I don't blame them. But as a player, which really matters, like you want to get in bed with Andrew Luck, not literally, you know what I'm saying, figuratively. You want to go all in on Mahomes. You want to go all in. It's risky. Like the Goff, the Mitch Trubisky, the Dak. Some of these guys are risky. It's the nature of the sport. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, the 49ers went all in with him. He tore his ACL. I mean, there's a lot of variables to all of this. But on the most basic level, can you consistently win playoff games with this quarterback? And if you're going to sign a long-term extension, when you have a ton of options, I don't know if I wouldn't do that if I was him. And again, he has kind of insider knowledge of this because he has family ties to a similar situation. Now, the Ravens, a little more consistent of an organization, but they're also losing Ozzie Newsome. I would recommend, like, if I'm going to do a partnership, people are going to be like, oh, I think John Elway's pretty good. Now, they have ownership issues with the Bolin family and suing, and I get there are probably question marks there. But if I'm John Harbaugh and I don't mind moving, and listen, you're talking to someone that doesn't like moving, done it a couple times, have zero aspiration to ever do it again. So, but that's, coaches are a little different. But John has had a pretty stable NFL career. Coached for the Eagles for 10 years, and he's coached for the Ravens for 10 years. So in 20 years, Harbaugh has had to move, like, I've made the drive from Philly to Baltimore. It's like, I don't know, hour, 20 minutes, hour and a half. Hell, it might not even be that long. I think the drive to D.C., no traffic, is a couple hours. So he hasn't had to move far in 20 years. It's an unheard of, you know, coaching career. Him and like Andy Reid have moved the least in the last 20 years in the NFL, and Belichick. Most people are moving around. Like Kyle Shanahan, you know, he's been on like 6 different teams in the last 10 years. That's usually the way the profession works. They're also highly paid for it. But my number one recommendation always is, whenever you get into a partnership, and partnerships are really important, probably more than ever in modern day business, because you need other people more than ever, given, you know, how much things cost in our world business. But it's no different in football. Like who you sign a deal with as your general manager and your quarterback is really, really important. It'll dictate your future success. Okay, let's dive into the Dallas Cowboys and their quarterback, Dak Prescott, which I think, mainly because it's the Cowboys, but I do think it's fair to say he's one of the more polarizing quarterbacks in the NFL. Is he good or is he not good? And I'm leaning on the side, the more I've watched him this year, that he's pretty good. And he's definitely someone that I would build around and attempt to make my franchise quarterback. Now, I think we have to be careful at this. Now, most people in life, you know, no different in football, don't just hit the ground running and dominate from day one at anything we do. And speaking from a guy's perspective, certain people mature physically, mentally, at all different rates, even people at the heights of their profession. Dak Prescott started at quarterback for several years in Mississippi State, took that program that's a podunk, middle of nowhere, just does nothing. At one point in time, they were a top 5 program, remember, his senior year. And he became and has become a very solid NFL quarterback. He drafted in the middle of rounds. Not every quarterback is Andrew Luck or, hell, even Carson Wentz that just dominates by year one or two. Some guys take time. And I think the guy Dak Prescott played is a great example. Russell Wilson was not good to like year 3 or 4.
He wasn't even like the top 10 best player on his team the first couple years. The first time he won the Super Bowl, he was probably worse than Dak. Like, not everyone is just ready to, you know, start a business at 22 years old. Some people may not be ready until they're 50. But that guy at 50 may be one of the best business leaders we've ever seen. Like, I remember going to high school with a guy named Casey Newman. And every morning he was going on a swimming scholarship to Stanford. Just an unreal swimmer. But I remember having class with him. He'd have to work out at like 5:30 in the morning. And then he would work out extra at night and he'd do his homework. He was a genius. Obviously, he's going to Stanford. And I always thought in the back of my head, I never admitted it at the time, like, how can I compete against this guy in life? He's just on a different level. Now, 15 years later, you know, now at 18, I was nowhere close to that. Hell, in my early 20s, I was a pretty immature guy. I would say I grew just massively from a maturation standpoint, from just in my business and just in life, like after 25, 26. Like, my greatest growth as a human has been like 28 through right now, and I hopefully continue to grow. Some people, though, you know, crush it day one leaving college. Hell, start businesses in college. Just like some players and quarterbacks and NBA stars are great as rookies. You know, some guys like Steph Curry, it takes them a little time. You know, not everyone operates at the same speed, but the goal is to get to the same finish line. And ultimately, I think Dak, I'd personally kind of compare him to some version of Russell Wilson and Cam Newton. He has a lot of similarities to Russell in the sense that calm, cool, collected, very mature. He also has some physical gifts that I would relate to Cam Newton. When he runs, he can run people over. And he's a smart runner. He doesn't always look to run. Neither does Cam. Now, you can design runs. I'm just talking about dropbacks when he ends up scrambling. He will run through tackles, which eventually could be a concern. But he's also, like Cam, very hit or miss passer. Like, sometimes he'll make a pass like he did in that playoff game where you're like, that is a dime. And other plays, you'll be like, how do you miss that guy? He's wide open. And again, it's because he's young. He was not a polished player when he came into the NFL. He hasn't played around that many skill guys beside his running back, which doesn't factor in as much as a thrower. So when I look at Dak Prescott, I go, God, this guy has a lot of room for growth. If we could just exponentially improve, like slowly, you don't have to overnight improve from point A to point F. You just got to get from point A to point B. You know, complete an extra two balls a game. And then one day, maybe in 5 years, that number went 2 to 5. And that's kind of where Russell Wilson has grown. Now, Russell's still somewhat flawed. Now, he's a much better player than Dak, but he's not, quote unquote, the perfect quarterback. But anyone with a brain knew by like his second year, there is a lot to work with there. Now, it wasn't until year 5 or 6 that Russell became the best player on his team. It's okay that in year 3, Dak is nowhere near the best player on his own team. That's okay. I don't even think you need to pay him after this offseason. You can just pay him after next offseason. You can let him slowly work into it. Kaepernick is a good example. Like, it took him some time. He got to redshirt, and then he came in the middle of his second year. He wouldn't have been ready right off the bat. Some guys are, though. You know? I mean, Derek Carr was lucky. He got to start right away. He wasn't that good as a rookie. But it was clear, you saw as a rookie, like, there's something to work with. Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, he was a second-round pick, but he got to sit for a while. And then he came to San Francisco kind of ready-made. Like, we expect all these quarterbacks, just like we do in life, like, every human is the same mentally and with maturity. Any people listening to this know when you hire someone, certain people are just more ready. Now, that doesn't mean that the upside of another individual isn't higher. Sometimes 2 years into a job, you might go, God, I'm glad I hired that guy. He was terrible at first, but he had a lot of room for growth. That's kind of the way I look at myself as an employee. I'm not a hit the ground running guy. I got to feel things out. I got to learn on the job. And then I get stronger as we go. You know, I'm never going to be the smartest guy in the room. For example, and I'm not comparing myself to a quarterback, but I can relate. Like, Dak is never going to be the most physically gifted, but he clearly has a lot of attributes that really parallel, you know, success in the NFL. Now, one thing he has to improve is hitting basic throws. But I saw Russell Wilson dramatically improve over a 3 or 4 year period. That's really the knock why, and again, this isn't a political statement, why Kaepernick kind of washed out of the league, beside being blackballed. Don't get me wrong, I believe he was blackballed. But he wasn't accurate. and he never got any more accurate. Like, Russell Wilson has just slowly gotten more accurate, and he's a great deep ball thrower. Like, Dak does need to improve on something beside his legs. But I do think that you don't need to be Bill Walsh to realize there is a lot to work with there. And he's lucky that he's on a team with a lot of talented players. Just like at one point in time, Russell Wilson was lucky that he was on a team with a lot of talented players. Hell, I've said it all along. Cam Newton's never even been the best player on his own team. That's okay. Like, if Zeke's always there and DeMarcus Lawrence and Amari, that's fine. You know, now it gets a little more complicated when you pay him a lot of money. But I think it's so clear that Dak's ceiling is really high. It just takes a little longer. He wasn't a ready-made project when you got him. There's a reason you drafted him in the fourth round. Not every 22-year-old you hire fresh out of college is going to be a great first-year employee. But some might be better than others. But certain guys are going to have way more upside, you know? And it's, to me, it's pretty clear that the upside on Dak is really high. I believe in the player. And I actually like them to win in L.A. this weekend. Not necessarily because of him, more Zeke and their defense. But I like the guy. I think he's bringing a lot to a table, and it's pretty clear he's good. Is he great? No. Is he worth an enormous contract? At this point in time, probably not. I'd like to wait a year. But I do think at one point in time in the near future, it might be 2 more years or 3 more years, he will be worth it. I would bet on Dak Prescott continuing to get better. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag. You can slide up in those DMs at John Middlecoff, and I answer questions. Questions, Ari Kingsbury and USC. That'd be Cliff Kingsbury. Sorry, I clicked on the wrong button. How do you see it playing out for Kingsbury? I can't imagine he'd want to stay with USC for long. I hear he's contemplating paying the buyout to leave. Yeah, I think we're all hearing that riddle on the internet. And Swan refused to let NFL teams interview. I think we all kind of know the story. Basically, this question is, where do you stand on this issue? I'm torn. Listen, you took the job, and I think Kingsbury took the job. He had some idea that NFL teams wanted to talk to him. But what does the wise man tell you? A bird in the hand's better than two in the bush. So I get why he'd take the job. But the moment NFL teams want to interview him for their head coach, I don't think Lynn Swan first should block him, and that Cliff Kingsbury shouldn't be interested in interviewing. And I saw Colin tweeted about it earlier today. It's Monday. And he was just saying how, like Coward was saying, he was old school and he believes once you sign a contract, you know, you should be present in that job. And listen, I agree with that sentiment and really that logic in theory, but I am a believer of the really truly the person that cares the most about you is you. So you always have to be willing to do the best, do things the best in your interest. And sometimes it's not always kind to others, maybe your employer at the time, maybe to some of your fellow coworkers. But I also think this one's kind of black and white. He took the USC offensive coordinator job, which in theory is a great job. Obviously, it's a little overrated right now. But then NFL teams wanted to interview him to be their head coach. To be their head coach. Like, name me another offensive coordinator in college at School X, Texas, Oklahoma. I'm not saying the head coach. I'm saying the head coach is offensive coordinator. So let's say in theory Lincoln Riley had an offensive coordinator, Herman had an offensive coordinator, Urban Meyer's offensive coordinator. Like, a team wanted to interview Ryan Day. Team wanted to interview Tom Herman Jr., whoever, you know, the offensive coordinator on those programs. Obviously, Ryan Day is the offensive coordinator now. No program would stop that guy from interviewing. So I think it's a pretty natural kind of process. Now, the timeline is a little funky because he signed with them, what, in early or mid-December. But then these teams, like, it was kind of clear that every NFL owner wanted a guy, a white guy, 35 to 40, 6 to 6 foot 2, and relatively skinny. Not a overly chubby belly. You know, that's what they were looking for. Cliff Kingsbury fits that to a T. Skinny, former quarterback, coaches quarterback, really good with offense, and has head coaching experience. Like Matt LaFleur. I recorded a lot of this segment, so I'll get into it probably later this week. LaFleur accepted the head coaching job today to be the Green Bay Packers, or I guess they've offered him the job. Like, I'd argue Kingsbury's resume is better than that guy. It really is. He's had more on his plate. I've seen him prove more. Now, he's never done it at the NFL level, but I've only seen LaFleur coach offense for 1 year, and it didn't go that well. So I don't have a big problem with Kingsbury, especially if he's being offered NFL jobs. I think that's a pretty natural progression in the industry he works in. Now, again, the timeline's funky. Lynn Swann's old school, so I get, you signed a contract, you got to honor it. You know, I'm not a huge believer in that when the second contract is way better. You know, if you break a contract to enter another contract that is the similar, then I think you're kind of an idiot. But if you break an offensive coordinator contract to become a head coach, an offensive coordinator in college to become a head coach in the NFL, like if he becomes the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, what is that, 10 times better than being the offensive coordinator at USC? You know, and one of the big selling points for Kingsbury is like, he's young, single, and really good looking. And trust me, LA was the place. Babes everywhere. Well, if you're listening to this and you've never been to the Tempe, Scottsdale area, I got news for you. It's, you know, it could be argued they can go toe-to-toe with LA. Like, it's pretty sweet. And if you're going to be the head football coach and you're going to make $4, $5, $6 million, I mean, that's a pretty good gig, you know? That's a pretty good gig for a single guy that looks like Cliff Kingsbury. So I think I actually fall on the opposite side the more I think about it. I got no problem with Kingsbury leaving SC if he becomes the head coach as of right now, which looks like the Arizona Cardinals. With Elway still wanting to rely on his defense and mostly interviewing defensive coaches, how do you see Denver's building for the future as it's becoming a more offensive league? I think it's hard to answer this question until I see who he hires. Clearly, it looks like he wants to hire someone with experience. He just hired Vance Joseph. It did not go well. He was clearly over his head. I think when he went down the well 3 years ago, even with John Fox and then with Gary Kubiak, both those guys had a lot of experiences and they had a lot of success. So when I think Elway, when he looks at Chuck Pagano, Vic Fangio, I think that's the type of guy he's looking for. I actually think Chuck Pagano would not be terrible. The problem is, when you hire Chuck Pagano, you know, you're eventually going to, if your offense is good, you're going to lose the offensive coordinator. So, I don't know. I like Elway. I can't really have a strong opinion on this until I see who he hires. Because we've seen time and time again, just because you interview someone, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to hire him. Like, it kind of feels like they're going to hire Chuck Pagano right now, or hell, Vic Fangio. It kind of feels like they'll end up with, you know, as we see time, like I didn't see Bruce Arians ended up in Tampa. I definitely didn't see Matt LaFleur ending up in Green Bay. So you just never know with these situations. You never know who they're interviewing behind the scenes. I'll have thoughts once they finally hire someone. Again, you can always slide up in my DMs, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff. Appreciate you listening. A lot going on. Second round of the playoffs. College football is over. Clemson's the champs. 2 and 3 years for Dabo. What a stud. And appreciate everyone listening. Keep subscribing to this bad boy, 3 and Out podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast. And again, I really, really appreciate the support, the interaction. Y'all can always slide up in my DMs, Twitter, Instagram. All my handles are the same, at John Middlecoff. And have a great week. Talk to you soon.